Hi there, welcome to the April 2022 Sunday Writers Club podcast, coming to you from Vienna, Austria. I'm Paul Malone, and this month I'm pleased to present a short story titled The Soup by Sunday Writers Club member Sarah Roos Essel. For anyone who enjoys the sights and smells of a farmer's market or values wholesome home-cooked food, Sarah's story and the chicken soup recipe are bound to please. You'll find the recipe at the end of the story on the Sunday Writers Club blog, and you can listen to Sarah discussing cooking, moving countries, and of course writing, right after we listen to her reading The Soup.
The Soup. You can only buy butter from Johann, and only on Sundays, and only before 10:30 a.m. Franz looked at me sternly through round tortoiseshell glasses and spoke with a thick Austrian accent. His breath smelled of cigarettes and his daily glass of breakfast Prosecco. And eggs. You must only buy Freilandhaltung und Bio, organic free range, and only for Maria, and only right when she sets up her stall at 6:30 a.m. Good to bring a, what's the English word for it? A flashlight. Franz continued. I didn't want to interrupt his concentration, but I really needed to stop and write this all down. This seemed to be essential life-or-death information about how to source food and cook in my new country. And this was the CNBC local event of the week, the Klosterneuburg Farmers Market. We moved to Austria from Berkeley, California in late August, and while our 120-year-old crumbling villa was being renovated, my husband, two young daughters, and six-month-old golden doodle puppy rented an apartment from Franz on the town square in Klosterneuburg, a village just outside Vienna. Franz was a fourth-generation hotel apartment owner and lived his entire life in the historic and equally crumbling building that faced the Stadtplatz. This legacy made him a sort of de facto town mayor and certainly the de facto expert on all things worth eating in our 40,000-person village. The absolute certainty in which he spoke, coupled with an actual degree from the Cordon Bleu, made me take his advice very, very seriously. And what happens if I don't make it in time to Maria for the eggs? I can just get some at the grocery store across the street, right? His look could have frozen over hell. No, then you simply do not have eggs, he shouted, eyes bulging in disbelief at my idiotic question. Slowly, as weeks passed, I began to absorb the rhythm of the market's offering and the seasons of my newly adopted Heimat, or homeland. I had lived in California for nearly two decades and was spoiled by the never-ending supply of gorgeous produce. Northern California's temperate climate blessed its residents with beautiful fruits and vegetables all year long, without interruption. One had to pay very close attention in order to even notice the seasons passing. Figs, for example, were only at the farmer's market in September, and they arrived so soft and sumptuous that they were hours away from spoiling. Blueberries trucked in from the Oregon coast marked summer's arrival in June and left as suddenly as they appeared a few days later. But things like avocados could be purchased in December for Christmas Eve guacamole or in July for a 4th of July barbecue, no matter. Tomatoes of all varieties and colors could be used for salsa verde, bolognese, or ratatouille all year round. The senses never suffered in Northern California, that was for sure. But perhaps in some ways my memory did, as I could never quite remember what time of year things happened. Not with the cues of weather or seasonal meals anyway. I knew that the seasons in Austria would be a different beast altogether, and I was thrilled to move to a four-season climate for the dramatic changes in living and ritual that they would bring. August in Austria was marked with absolute abundance. Bursting cherry tomatoes still on the vine, crisp cucumbers with icy cold centers, and raspberries so electric pink they looked fake. If we arrived at the market after 9 a.m., it was shoulder to shoulder with shoppers, straw baskets bumping, children and dogs running amok. The lines were long, but they were also part of the experience and an opportunity to practice my broken German with a neighbor waiting alongside me. Look at the color of the carrots today, I might whisper. Unbelievable. How is Maria already out of eggs? It's only 7 a.m. Like clockwork, September's mornings grew darker and colder. Flashlights were indeed needed at 7 a.m. Hokkaido pumpkins practically glowed from within and lay heaped in piles at every stall. Apples rested in wooden crates with their leaves and branches still intact. Sturm, young fermented wine, was sold in foggy bottles without labels. I observed every change like an anthropologist, desperate to understand this land and the people who inhabit it, hoping that in doing so, I would find myself suddenly belonging to it too. Autumn continued and the Sunday market offering grew smaller and smaller. The lines disappeared as the wool sweaters were pulled out of storage. There were many Saturdays in late fall that I would stare out our apartment window as the cold gray rain poured down. And on more than one occasion, I thought to myself, France will never know if I skip the market today and buy eggs at the supermarket. It felt like a sort of betrayal to even think this way. Don't worry, there's always something interesting and always something worth cooking here, Franz said to me one frostbitten morning in November, as if sensing my early onset seasonal depression. By this time, the fresh berries of summer were long gone, and only fruits and vegetables that could be stored in a dark cellar were left. Potatoes, carrots, apples, onions, and more potatoes. The bright colors of summer had vanished, and the muted Caravaggio still life colors of winter had arrived. Franz strutted over to the butcher's stall and pondered for a long time. Two whole chickens sat perched alongside rows of glossy bratwurst and plump Käsekrainer sausages. How fresh are these? He asked Johann, who by now was sold out of butter, as read the sign next to his cash box. Butter, Ausverkauft. They were butchered last night around 8 o'clock, Johann replied without sentiment. Franz looked slightly annoyed, and I wondered what he really wanted to hear, that they were killed in the guy's van a few minutes ago? He bought them both anyway and scuttled back to his apartment without saying goodbye. Later that week, Martin, my husband, had his first business trip away since we moved to Austria. I was nervous to navigate our daily life alone for a week. I couldn't even properly read the road signs, let alone handle a real emergency well. I've heard that a worry is a prayer for that which you do not want, though it's never stopped me from obsessively mulling over worst-case scenarios. And so it goes. I was rushing around that first morning alone, pouring muesli, heating milk for hot chocolate, hustling to pack lunch boxes as the dog panted at the door, brushing and braiding hair. I dropped the hairbrush, and when I bent down to pick it up, something snapped. I shouted out in pain, startling the girls and the dog. My back had gone out, and I laid there in a fetal position on the floor, unable to get up. Seemingly every muscle in my lower back was in spasm. It was excruciating. As if sent from above, there was a knock at the door. Franz and his wife Barbara were there to deliver our weekly change of towels and bedsheets. Oh my God. Franz shook his head from side to side and made a tsk-tsk noise. Babsi, help me lift her into bed. Then go get your Ayurvedic massage oils and I will make the soup. The girls were dropped off at school and I was gingerly lifted into bed, still in agonizing pain with tears running down my cheeks. Franz left and returned 10 minutes later, cradling a huge stainless steel soup cauldron against his chest, two chickens still tied with string, and heaps of herbs and bundled root vegetables were piled inside. He didn't speak as he covered the chicken carcasses in cold water and clicked on the burner. I could hear the soft, repeating swish of the carrot peeler as I stared at the ceiling. How was I going to manage this week alone if I couldn't physically get out of bed? Anxiety quickened my heart. I tried to focus on the noise of the carrot peeler. There is significant research on the almost mystical healing powers of chicken soup. It is said to have the same antibiotic and antiviral properties as prescription medicine and can give an inexplicable boost to the immune and anti-inflammatory systems in the body. They say that a homemade slow-cooked chicken broth can heal nearly any kind of malaise, from the common cold to a broken heart. While the soup boiled and gurgled, Barbara massaged earthy smelling oil into my lower back, tucked a hot water bottle under my feet, and gave me a tea to drink that tasted like hay. Your nervous system is in overdrive. Just like a computer, you need a reboot. She smiled at me sympathetically. I fell immediately asleep. A few hours later, I woke up from my nap to a steaming giant bowl of soup at my bedside. Pieces of brightly colored vegetables swirled around the clear, salty broth. The chickens themselves had all but disintegrated into the mix, but their memory and flavor was unforgettable. I finished two bowls and closed my eyes again, silent with gratitude for this act of kindness from two people who morphed from strangers to angels to family within minutes. When I opened my eyes, I noticed that someone had left the front door of the apartment ajar. Instinctively, I jumped up to close it so the dog wouldn't escape on the busy street. I caught myself by surprise. The pain in my back had vanished, and I was mobile again. I turned around to see Franz and Barbara smiling smugly at me from the kitchen, proud of their work and not even a little bit surprised by the miraculous healing powers of the soup.
Sarah, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Sarah and I are sitting outside, freezing at the moment. It's spring in Vienna. We're at Schönbrunn, which is the big kind of the palace gardens. And it is beautiful. It's spring, but it's also pretty chilly.
And we're covered in blankets and hoping for another round of lattes.
We hope the waiter comes soon. Sarah, we've just listened to The Soup. Mm-hmm. And it's a fabulous, fabulous story. And before we talk a little bit about the story, I'm curious. Franz's chicken soup, ranked from 1 to 5, just how good is it if you cook it?
5 being the best.
Yes, of
okay,
course.
Okay,
yeah.
It's important to know the
yeah.
scale.
Okay. Yeah.
5 for its truly miraculous healing powers. And
yeah.
and actually, I grew up in a house where food was really an important part of my childhood, but my mom was also an efficient cook, so she wasn't someone who would have suggested to boil a broth for 8 hours. Like, that, she just didn't have the time or interest in that.
Yeah.
And Franz sort of taught me by way of this recipe that the longer you cook many things, and this in particular, the more wonderful and powerful and delicious they become.
Yeah.
So he taught me this art of patience, too. Like,
yeah.
if you... And now it's part of my own ritual in my family. If someone starts to get a cold or starts to get sick, this recipe, this soup goes on the stove that the morning I hear the first sniffle, boils for the day, and we eat it for dinner. And then we have it in the freezer or stocked for lunch for the next week.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to try. I know how to get a great big pot.
You do, yes.
I mean, Franz keeps the bar pretty high in terms of, you know, how you get the ingredients and how you're going to get the chicken. But anyway, I'll give it a crack.
Yeah, it's not required that you have all these special farmers market,
yeah.
like special chickens. The most important thing is actually that you cook it a long time. That's it.
Okay, yeah. Okay, good stuff. And I suppose this, I mean, because Franz, you said he was a fourth generation in Klosterneuburg.
Yeah.
So this recipe, has it been handed down over generations, or is it from Barbara, or is it Franz's own personal?
It's a good question. I think it might even be Barbara's.
Okay.
Because she comes into their relationship and into my friendship with her as well as the sort of nutritional expert, and she has a background in Ayurvedic medicine. So she's really a healer in her own way, and so I have a feeling that this was a soup she brought into his life, and he sort of tweaked and does his job sourcing the right ingredients. And,
okay.
But
right.
they're very much a team, so it's maybe the alchemy of two people cooking it together. I don't know.
Yeah, they sound like a star couple in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The story, it's a part of a larger body of work,
mm-hmm.
Which is your memoir about motherhood and moving abroad, or from San Francisco Bay Area to Vienna. I mean, and this story explores, you know, this kind of the differences, cultural differences, I guess, and it's kind of played out in the marketplace when we see this kind of the, in Austria, the kind of the seasons, so you have to pick your, you know, the food according to the seasons, whereas I guess in California, it's all year round.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've been here for 3 years, and I guess there's I know too, coming from Australia to Vienna, there's some massive cultural differences. What's the best you're thinking here after 3 years?
Yeah, it's been an interesting transition for me, because we moved here not too far before the pandemic began.
Mm.
And so this whole idea of getting settled in Austria and really starting to understand the differences in what our life looks like here is just now starting, because we spent so much time in this alternate reality of lockdown and being really isolated in this home together. So on one hand, we were living here, but we weren't really having our life begin yet here. So I feel like that's starting. But that being said, we just went back to America for Easter and spent 3 weeks there. And so that was my first time having this jolt, it being home, quote unquote, in America, and then returning home to Austria, and how it felt, and observing that feeling. And I really appreciate like the attention to detail in Austria. It feels to me like a, on one hand, it's a smaller scale. It's a much smaller country. There's much fewer people. But everything is done with such care and finesse because there is maybe just less volume of everything going on. But I found it quite overwhelming to be in the big mega scale of the States, you know, like going shopping, and it was just completely overwhelming how many cereal choices there are. And we've really simplified our senses here, and I love that.
Going back to the idea of the memoir, so I guess, you know, moving to Vienna is kind of the catalyst, or that's the start of it, or a part of it at least. But you've been writing for many years, and we were talking earlier about you having three boxes of kind of, you know, notebooks stacked away from decades of writing. So what have you been doing the last few decades with the writing? Has it always been the memoirs been the big thing on your mind, or have you been working on other things as well?
I've always, since I was a teenager, I've been really interested in reading other people's journals and memoirs, and that has been that golden thread of the type of writing that I'm interested in.
Dann mal noch was tun für Sie.
Ja, bitte einmal für mich einen Lunch mit laktosefreier Milch.
Ja.
Ich würde Kaffee Latte bitte.
Kaffee Latte.
Danke. Super. And there we have our waiter, and our drink has come.
Very stressful to have to speak German on this podcast.
Oh, yes, yes. Completely forgot that. We might edit this section. Okay, we have to pick up on the thread.
So back to the golden thread of what I have really enjoyed reading and had hoped to write is in this genre of memoir, but like published journals. So it began in my 20s. I read an author named Sabrina Ward Harrison. She published these mixed media journals about her sort of coming age experience in her 20s. This really had a huge impact on me in telling the story of where you are in your life, even if it's not glamorous or complicated or dramatic, but to just tell the story of what life is like. I found this fascinating in her work. And then I went on and read Mae Sarton is another favorite author of mine. One of her books is called Journal of a Solitude. I must have read that book 20 times. And it's just it's a life, a year in the life of a woman living alone in a home and being a writer and her creative process and her habits. And I've always been fascinated with that. And I think I've always wanted to write a memoir, but I've been sort of waiting for the story to happen to me to write about it. And you mentioned that coming to Vienna was a catalyst. I think Vienna was a catalyst because my life looks so different now and there's a lot more to notice and talk about. But the biggest catalyst was probably my entry into motherhood 10 years ago and the tremendous changes that occurred in my own perception of who I am and my purpose here, and so that's really what got me thinking about picking up this genre again. I've dabbled in other things. For a long time I thought maybe I would like to be a poetry teacher at university, so I went and got an MFA in poetry. Well, I haven't written much poetry since that. Too bad. Maybe for the better, I don't know. So I'm coming back again to the memoir, which feels like home.
You talked very briefly before about habits, the writing habits and things like that. I mean, you've got three children, you're also working, you're an incredibly busy person. So how do you find the time to write your memoir?
I'm like obsessed with other people's routines, and I read all the time about the creative habits of fantastic creative people, and I'm still figuring out what mine is. Yeah. I wish I was asking you about your rhythm in the summer, getting up early. I want to be the kind of person that gets up at 4:30 and writes before work starts, but it's not that way. I sneak it in. I really just sneak it in.
Yeah.
And I've been trying, actually, over the last few months. I'm doing The Artist Way by Julia Cameron. This is like a really nice sort of creative reset program. It's a great book, but she has this ritual of morning pages. So for you write three longhand pages every morning, sort of first thing.
Kaffee latte.
The idea is that you write three longhand pages writing of just junk, like just stream of consciousness, crap to get that out of your brain so that when you have breaks in the day to do the real writing, that the real writing is available to you because you got the junk out of the way. So that's been a big schedule change for me, of just like forcing that in. I did it this morning before I left. I had two kids hanging off the chair. One was yelling at me in the toilet, like, I need your help. And I'm like, I'm on page 2.5. I'll be with you in a half a page.
Look, thanks very much for your time this morning to chat about the writing. But before we do head off, I'll just ask you, do you have any advice for new writers that are coming to Sunday Writers Club?
I think my advice would be to just keep writing every single day. And I can't stress this enough. This is the idea behind Morning Pages, but it's really the idea that volume, volume, volume will eventually yield quality. There will be gems that will come out of it, but you have to get stuff on the page, and the more the better. I think I finally stopped looking at writing as this like precious, holy craft that needed to have meaning every time, and just have it almost be like exercise. Like, go for a run and write 3 pages.
Yeah.
And just get that in your routine, and then it becomes more and more natural, and the barrier to entry becomes much easier.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you very much, Sarah, for your time. Very much appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.